All right, guys, thank you for coming this afternoon. I know it's a nice day to be outside, and I appreciate you all being here for this. As someone was asking before, you know, do we do this over and over again? And we don't. This is really one meeting that we just do once. So if you're applying to medical school for 2012 or dental school or vet school, this is hopefully going to be a helpful probably hour and a quarter where we go over a lot of information with you. By now, I mean, we're now early May, right? So last time we checked in with you was probably at the pre-application meeting when you were just starting this whole thing before winter break. By now, you hopefully have interviewed with us. If you haven't, you're one of the stragglers that might be coming in the next week or two. What else have you done? You've gotten your letters of recommendation, we hope. If you haven't, or if you're still missing some, you'll start getting emails from Jennifer in our office reminding you of what's still missing. And as she may have explained to you, you know, you're not in any critical state right now. But once we start writing your committee letters, which happens the first week of May, which would be right now, when we get to you, if you don't have all your letters, we're just going to skip over you and keep moving, because we really need to kind of get all, we've got 145 of you this year. So, you know, from your standpoint, you know, get on those recommenders that are still not coughing up their letter if you have some, or if you have any questions. Jen's pretty good about letting you know what's in your file or what's missing. So read your email first, please, before you just call her. But if you have any questions, just give her a call, okay? And you filled out those forms for us, which is the first step to doing a little bit more form filling out, which is what we're going to talk about today. But before we get to that, we want to talk briefly about the personal statement, and then we're going to go back to it later in the hour, okay? And I wanted to introduce Keith Shaw, who's the Associate Director of the Writing Center and Writing Program as well, or I don't know. I always get confused about those two. And he's going to talk to you a little bit about the role the Writing Center is going to play in the coming few weeks. So, Keith, go ahead.
If you don't mind, stand right there. Sure. Hi. So I run Princeton's Writing Center. It's nice to see a bunch of fellows and a number of students in the crowd. Real quickly, obviously Glenn is going to come back to talking a lot about the personal statement for med school and specifically what it is that you want to be trying to accomplish in order to make yourself stand out from the giant pile of other applications that obviously people reviewing these are going to be looking through. So I really just want to say two things about that and then kind of recommend using the Writing Center as a resource that can be really helpful for you. The first thing is just kind of a generic principle that you should really be keeping in mind the entire time you're going through this process, which is that your med school application, really like any other academic essay, is about making an argument. It's a different kind of argument than those that you might normally be making, but it's an argument nonetheless, which is about why you are the most kind of qualified candidate in that stack, and why the experiences that you've had and your ability to kind of take lessons from those experiences are the reason that they should select you rather than any of the 9 million other people that they might select. Now, thinking of it in terms of an argument can make that kind of appear intimidating in some respects, but you have all, through kind of the various pathways you've taken through Princeton, mastered a lot of the principles of argumentation. And the lessons that you've learned and that you've developed over time here do apply quite directly for that purpose. That said, though, it is obviously a different genre in a lot of respects. And this is one of those cases, more so than many of the other assignments that you've undertaken here at Princeton, if only because of the high stakes that you want to be able to get into the schools that you want to be able to get into, that you need to take the process of revision seriously. And this is something that should not be done in isolation. It should not be kind of a solitary process where your eyes are the only pair that take a look at the screen and try and figure out how to make this argument as persuasively as you can. But this is something that's done much better by having one or more alternative set of fresh eyes taking a look and telling you what they're seeing and making suggestions for how your argument could be much stronger than it currently is. This is obviously something that you can do with peers and friends and other students, and I strongly encourage you to do that. But I would also strongly encourage you to take advantage of the services that the Writing Center offers, because this is what we do all the time. And in particular, I wanted to let you know that starting in late May, we provide a specific service for people in exactly your position writing application personal statements for med school. We have fellows that have done this many times before, have been trained by Glenn take a look at your application letters and see what's working well and see what seems kind of weak, and help push you to reflect more on the lessons that you've taken from your own experiences, so you're not just kind of narrating your CV in a way that a reader will find boring, but be able to develop a kind of coherent thread through the piece that really kind of sells your qualifications and sells you as an applicant in a way that schools will find attractive. These aren't up on our website right now, but as of next Monday, you can go on to writing.princeton.edu and go to our Make an Appointment page, and you'll see special med school appointments available. They'll likely be starting late next week at the earliest, but late May, and then going into the summer, depending on demand, we'll kind of keep them going as long as you guys are interested. So I guess what I'm doing is making kind of a double pitch here. One is just simply that you don't do this thing by yourself. You're all very smart. Obviously, you wouldn't be in the room if this wasn't the case, and you're all probably very good writers. But the pool in which you're competing is saturated with really good writers. And you need to look for every competitive advantage that you can. And the best way to do that is to kind of have a community of other folks that are interested and invested in helping you push the argument that is your application letter as far as that can possibly go. And you know, beyond that, I hope you'll take advantage of the Writing Center conferences that we think have in the past shown really clear improvement in the letters that we've been seeing. So I'll stop there unless there are any questions and turn it back over to Glenn, because I know you have a lot of work to do over the next hour. Anyone? Okay, cool, that was easy. Good luck, everyone, and I hope we see you down in Whitman.
All right. Now let's break into groups and read each other's essays. No, I'm just kidding. It's a little workshop for the next hour. You look at me like I meant it. There's a lot to talk about. The first thing I want to know is how many of you here, if anyone, isn't even applying to medical school. Do we have any dental school applicants? Any vet school applicants? You can come out wherever you are. We know we interviewed you, but if we talk to you, well, you're not here, so I won't talk to people who aren't here. It's great. Well, I mean, in a way that simplifies things, because I can just talk about AMCAS. But there is, I mean, I probably asked you this at the pre-application meeting, too. Those of you using OMSAS for the Ontario schools or using TIMDAS for the Texas schools, those are really the only other two application services that you might be using if you're applying to medical school in this part of the world. And we're not really going to talk about those today. I mean, there's a lot of similarity between the application services, so we're really just going to talk about AMCAS. But if you have any individual questions about those other things, TIMDAS really is very, very similar to AMCAS. OMSAS I'm not as familiar with, but we can certainly explore it together if you're a Canadian and you're using that service to apply. The TIMDAS for those Texans here already opened. It opened, I think, yesterday or something. So you can start working on your TIMDAS application right now if you want to. The things, before we get started as well, I wanted to talk about the things on the board if you haven't noticed them. This time next week, exact same place, exact same time, we'll be talking about med school interviewing. For those of you that... did I write that here?
Maybe it's over there.
I think it's over there. Those of you that are seniors, please try to come to that if at all possible. Those of you that are juniors, we're going to do it again in September, so you don't have to be here for that one. But we don't do the second one until mid-September when you're back in school, and interviews have been starting earlier and earlier every year. I think last year they started in late August for some people. So if you're just worried about getting that information and you think you might get an interview early this year for some reason, then go ahead and come to this one. I mean, you're welcome at this one as well. The AMCAS is supposed to open up May 5th, which is Thursday, all right? Early June, we're going to talk about this later, but early June is when we would like you to be submitting this application. And then by early July, July 8th, it's just a purely HPA deadline when Jennifer really wants a copy of your verified AMCAS application and this thing called a letter of request form. So if you're doubting or if you don't know what I'm talking about, all those deadlines and everything's on this. Does this look familiar to you? It should. We have extra copies up here if you want to come get one afterwards. But the checklist and the application guide, you should already have a copy of at this point. All right, I'm going to talk a little bit about AMCAS application, just the most important parts of it. If it opens up May 5th and we're telling you to submit it in early June, you know, someone somewhere thought that a month of working on this thing was a good thing to give you, and there are reasons for that. It's much longer and more detailed and more complicated than applications you might have filled out for anything in your first 22 years of life. It really is. I know this is a little bit tedious, but we are going to go through some parts of it, and I just wanted to emphasize some things and give you some pointers. What does AMCAS do? This is not my stuff. This is what AMCAS gives us. But obviously, it's an online application. It's step one of you applying to medical school. It's going to collect your official transcripts from everywhere. It's going to verify your academic record and calculate these wonderful things called GPAs. I don't know if you've ever heard of those. And it's going to distribute that data to participating medical schools. It's going to collect and distribute your committee letter. And it does a criminal background check on you. Always important. These are the dates I just gave you. AMCAS, you'll be able to start submitting it June 1st, and we recommend you do that sometime in the first couple of weeks of June. And then med schools will start getting AMCAS applications. They have the ability to at least go and download your application, I guess, June 17th this year. This is how much it costs. And we did talk about this back in November. I don't know if you remember, but this is not, nickels and dimes here. And you can pay by Visa and MasterCard, which is always nice. This is what I really want to talk about. These are the 9 sections of the AMCAS application, okay? 9 sections of an application. The things that are probably going to cause you the most stress, or certainly at least take the most time, are the coursework section, the work activity section, and the essays, which is one of the things we're talking about today. The rest of this is very straightforward, and it will look like other applications that you filled out for jobs or college, things like that. This is just what when you're in the AMCAS application, what it looks like. This is kind of the dashboard. This is last year's version of it. But you're gonna develop a username and a password and go in and be able to complete it. By the way, when we tell you to work on this over the course of a month, you're not expected to sit down and do this in one sitting. I mean, you're gonna be able to go in and out, and in and out, and in and out, just like you would on any other website. And it will save any of the information you've done. But you're going to go through, and some of these sections you can't complete until you finish an earlier section. So why I tell you things like, oh, the work activity section takes the most time, you think, oh, maybe I'll work on that first. Wrong. You will go back and give the identifying information and the schools attended and all this other baloney first before you can get to the things that are really the more time-consuming and require more or thought on your part. Good. Okay. Coursework. I said coursework, work activities, and essay are the really big ones. Coursework causes you guys probably the most cause for picking up the phone and calling Jen in our office. And we do encourage you, if you at all possible, to call that number over there, which is the AMCAS hotline, and look at something called the instruction manual, which I'll talk about later, before you pick up the phone and call Jen, just because she doesn't work for AMCAS. She works for Princeton. It would be nice if she could do some other things in the month of May than answer your questions about the coursework section on the AMCAS application. But by all means, if you can't get the answers to other stuff, or if it's something that's Princeton specific that you really feel like you need to talk to someone here about, then by all means, call her. But try to check out the other resources first, if you don't mind. This is what it looks like to list a course, right? The year you took it, the term you took it, the school, the year in school that you took it, the course number, the course name, the course classification, the grade, the credit hours, did the course include a lab, and then some special stuff at the bottom. Okay, let me talk about really the only thing I really want to emphasize on here. Well, two things. One, when you get to course classification, and I wish I could drop down. I wish this was the actual live website, but it's not. One of the course classifications is going to be. I think that's where it is. Pretty sure that's where it is. It's going to be this wonderful thing called BCPM, which you guys already know about, the biology, chemistry, physics, and math grouping of courses that is informally called your science GPA, right? It's what most of you guys think of as your science GPA. We've been talking about this since you were a freshman, probably. You've been thinking about this. If you're at all concerned about what classifies as science and what doesn't, that's not the reason to pick up the phone and call Jen. The information is all given to you very clearly in this instruction manual on AMCAS. And those of you that have seen our questions of the week over the years, or because it's a question we get pretty much daily in our office, what counts as towards science, what is science, all that kind of stuff. We don't make this stuff up. AMCAS makes this stuff up. And they have categories of courses that they will count toward your BCPM GPA. So go to the instruction booklet I used to know what page number it was. I'm sorry, I forgot. But it's about a 70-page instruction booklet. In fact, if anything, I would just download it to my desktop tonight for 2012. And it's got a nice search feature to it. And you can search for anything. But one of the things you're really going to want to search for is what counts as science and what doesn't. Okay? If you get it wrong, the sky does not fall. This is not, you're not getting graded on your AMCAS application. I mean, there are certain parts of the application that are very important to do well. Don't get me wrong. But if you feel like, for instance, one of the definitions they give for what counts as science is if over 50% of the content of the course was biology, chemistry, physics, or math, even if it wasn't taught in that department. And that's what we've, that's the line we've always given you when you've asked this question. But it might be a neuro class, or well, it would be, a psych class in that case. Or it might be an engineering class, certainly. Or it might be something else. And you're worried that somehow you're getting it wrong. Please don't worry about it. The people at AMCAS verify this thing. That's why you give us something called a verified AMCAS when you're done. And there are instances where they change it in a direction you don't think they should have changed it. But it's very, very rare. I mean, most of the time, they're going to accept your definition of what these courses are. Because you're the person who took the courses, and they have 45,000 AMCAS applications to look at. They're not really going to spend a lot of time worrying about how you classified your course. But we, you know, we believe that you're going to do this honorably. And the times that it's changed, the times that what you've classified has been changed when you look at your verified AMCAS are usually things where it was pretty obvious. It was either a mistake on your part. It's usually a mistake on your part, an oversight of some sort. You just clicked the wrong field when you were filling this out. Okay, that's one thing I wanted to mention. The other thing I wanted to mention is that so many of you come in here with AP credit. At least a lot of you do when you get here. Your AP credit, you see down here, advanced placement is one of the special course types. But the year in school when you got your AP credit is your freshman year. So please make sure that you don't put it anywhere else or don't not put it on your AMCAS application. If you were given AP credit when you got here for how you did on tests in certain subjects, especially the subjects that required subjects for medical school, please make sure it ends up on your AMCAS application. If you went right into Orgo because we told you you could skip chemistry, make sure that your chemistry AP shows up on here. And where is it going to show up? It's going to show up under freshman year, but you're going to classify it as advanced placement. So we want med schools to obviously see that. Okay? I'm sure you're going to have questions as we talk about this stuff, and a lot of it is kind of fairly detailed. Just write your question down and hang on to it, okay, until we get done. And if I don't get to answering it, we'll certainly get it done. Get to it when you're done. Okay, work and activities. There are a lot of things I really want to say about that, but enter any work or extracurricular activity, honor, publication you would like to bring to the attention of medical schools, a maximum of 15 experiences, and they're going to want a contact email or phone number for the contact person you put down for each one of these things. Okay, let's talk about this a little bit. What is this? This is the work activities section. It's actually two pages, I think. No, it's just the one. Lots of different things here. I'm not going to go through all this, but there's some things I want to emphasize. When you're given 15 maximum fields to list things you've done since high school, or you may have one or two things from high school if it's a really, really significant distinction, you don't have to have 15. It's kind of like the 4 to 6 letters of recommendation. You don't have to have 6, okay? More is not better in these situations. So I would emphasize quality over quantity. Now, you know, go back and if you fill out forms for us, a lot of you already had a resume done, I know, when you came in to see us, but if you don't, you should at least have that form 1 and 2 that you filled out for us, those forms. Go back and look at all those activities and just make sure you list anything that you think is significant in your development. It could be something as short as a week of shadowing. I don't think it should be a day of shadowing, okay? But you could group all of the separate days of shadowing you've done under one activity and make that one activity on your application. Use some common sense here, okay? There's no right or wrong way to do this, but if you put yourself in the perspective of someone in admissions looking at this application, and this person had 15 activities, but every one of them involved 48 hours of your time, that's going to be kind of a joke. So think about the significance of these things, and please emphasize the quality over the quantity of what you're doing. You're going to order the activities chronologically. Well, the application is going to order the activities for you chronologically by start date. So the thing that you did freshman year is going to show up at the top. And you're going to think, oh my God, you know, I did this stupid club for one semester, and here it is at the top of my application, and I've been president of blah, 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 blah for the last 2 years, and it's buried down at the bottom. Relax, okay? This is a very common question that we get all the time. Med schools order your activities in whatever order they want them in. So what they're seeing is not what you're putting on your application, okay? I think what most often they do is reverse chronological for exactly what we're talking about. The things you've done more recently are going to be more important to you and probably more important to them than the things you did freshman year. But some of them do it alphabetically. Some of them do it chronologically, but they go to page 3 and look at the bottom first. I mean, they can do it however they want to do it. So please don't stress about the fact that, you know, your one semester of being in the pre-med society was right there as the very first thing when your thesis that you spent, you know, so much time on is buried down below. You're going to be given 700 characters to describe these experiences. Okay, that's not much. I don't know how 700 characters, including spaces. Was that a couple of sentences? I guess probably. A few sentences. Please limit that to describing the extent of or the limits of that experience. That's why they give you that field. Okay, it's not so much about what you thought of that experience or what you got out of that experience as much as it is just giving them some meat on the bones for them understanding what it was you did. Because no matter how much you list the average hours a week, the organization name, the country you did it in, the blah, 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 you know, that's not going to really give them a sense of things. So try to spend that experience description down here for 700 or fewer characters to just give them a little bit of context for understanding what you did, okay? Then you are going to, okay, your applicants are asked to identify up to 3 experiences they consider to be the most meaningful. When considering which experience are the most meaningful, they'll be prompted to consider the transformative nature of the experience, the impact made while engaging the activity in the personal growth experience. Yep, here we go. So once you've clicked this box here in the middle, that this is a new thing this year. Once you click that box on 3 of your experiences, then you're going to be given more space, okay? And I think you're given 1,300 characters, roughly, to write a more detailed description. So the little just extent of description of what you did doesn't apply to all of your activities. It only applies to most of them. But 3 of them, if you were, you know, the captain of one of our varsity athletic teams, or your thesis maybe was, especially if it was really health related, or you did some really extensive research one summer, or you were really involved with, or you're going off to this might be something you want to mention if you know enough about it. You might be going off to Princeton Asia or Princeton Africa next year or something. And you want to describe that. Make sure that, you know, ideally those would be one of your 3. But you are going to have to do some prioritizing in your mind about these things you've done and which are the most meaningful to you. And then you're given more space to talk about them. Okay? I actually kind of like this. Please do include your senior thesis. I've mentioned it a couple times now, but those of you that are seniors that have turned it in by now, I hope, or very close to turning it in, you would be foolish to not list it. We don't usually tell people to list their JP work. You might, if you list, you know, if your department did 2 or 3 JPs over the course of your junior year, you might list them all as one activity, especially if they're related to your maybe future goals. You know, you kind of, again, use your judgment. But generally speaking, the junior independent work doesn't need to be one of your activities. There are exceptions to that. But include what you're doing this summer and include what you're doing next year if you're a senior and you're graduating. Now, how do we do that? It hasn't started yet, right? Well, you know, I don't think I'm going to get struck by lightning if I say to fudge it a little bit, because it's really the only way it's going to get on your AMCAS application, and I do think it's very important to get on there. So, start date, you can't put a start date in the future. The application won't let you. So put today, or put the day you're filling it out as the start date, okay? And then in the description, and you may be using, you know, a few of your 700 characters to do this. But in the description, just say the actual start date is July 1st, or the actual start date is September 1st, or the actual start date is May 31st, or whatever it is, and then describe it. That's being honest. That's, you know, not making it sound like it's something you've already done, but it is getting it on your application. So those of you that do have something lined up next year already that you know what you're doing, please don't leave it off your AMCAS application. That would be really silly. And the same thing would apply to something this summer, if you're a rising senior and you've got something you're doing this summer, okay? So, but just make sure you use the field, the descriptive field to tell the truth, okay? What else? Honors. You may not know this yet, but if you're graduating, those of you that are seniors that are graduating in the next few weeks and leaving Princeton, your department may give you honors or high honors or highest honors. Technically, guys, I know this is not what typical Princeton students and Princeton alumni think, But technically, that is not those aren't Latin honors. That doesn't equate to cum laude, magna cum laude, and summa cum laude. Because it's a departmental thing. Cum laude, magna cum laude, and summa cum laude are a university-wide institutional thing, and Princeton does not have Latin honors. Okay. So, but I know, and you guys know, that a lot of you on your resumes, or well, you may not have done it yet if you haven't gotten these honors yet, but your peers that have graduated for decades before you are doing that. They're putting that, you know, they're get high honors, they're putting magna cum laude on their resume. That's actually misleading. It's not really what it is. The only thing I would tell you to do, go ahead and do it, because I if you want to, I know it's the way the world kind of sees those things, and it's another one of those unusual things about Princeton that you want to make sure people understand. But please, in your writing, if you're writing in your essay or if you're talking about in an interview, just make sure you say departmental honors, because your department is the one that's determining this. And the criteria from department to department are vastly different. I don't know if you guys know this, but, you know, someone who's an English major and someone who's a computer science major is undergoing completely different criteria for whether or not they're getting honors. So it's not a university-wide thing. You know this already? Okay. All right, just try to represent yourself as honestly as you can, please. All right, enough preaching. You're going to get to something called the letters, and this is not the actual slide for the committee letter, but I just wanted to make a point here that if you're coming from Princeton and you've done your pre-application interview with me or with Ms. Deutsch in the last few weeks or last few months, then you have a committee letter, okay? So you're going to check committee letter when you're given all these. You're going to be given a bunch of different, I think there's three different choices of what your undergraduate institution offers in the way of supporting you. And at Princeton, you have a committee letter. So please make sure you check that. And if you have any questions about what else to put in terms of my contact information, I'm going to be the committee letter author on your applications. Just look at the yellow checklist that you got earlier this year, because it's all on there. Okay. Yeah, here it is. These are the three choices: committee letter, letter packet, and individual letter. And see, this is where you put in the contact information. Once you've done that, you're given something called a letter request form. And that's what we mentioned here. That's something that needs to get to our office as soon as you finish it. Jennifer's going to need, there's a code number, a letter ID number on here. She's going to need that to upload your letters to AMCAS so that medical schools can download them. Okay? Just make sure she gets this. What most of you do is most of you save this as a PDF and just email it to Jen, and that's probably the fastest, easiest way to do it. But if you don't want to do that, you can print it out and walk it over to our office. We don't care, but please don't just email her the number. She needs the actual form, okay? So get that to her. And again, you know, this seems like a lot of things to remember, but remember, I did put them all on your checklist, so this is not... And we come to the essay. I think... That's it. Oh, before we get to the essay, let me just say, what happens after AMCAS? Do you guys remember? You hit submit, right, in early June, and then what happens? There's this verification process that goes on. It can take many weeks sometimes, depending on the situation. Usually it just takes a week or two for AMCAS to verify your visa number and make sure you paid and all that kind of stuff. And then after, as it said on here, after June 17th, med schools can start downloading it. When they get your AMCAS application, they will probably mostly automatically send you a secondary application. Most schools these days send secondaries automatically, except for just a few exceptions. So if you apply to 15 schools, you're probably going to get close to 15 secondaries, maybe not quite. And you're going to fill those out within a week or two after you get them and get them sent back. So those of you that have plans this summer that are really busy, just make sure you are allowing enough time to really work on those and get them turned around and sent back within a week or two after you get them. They will mostly be online applications as well. And they're significantly shorter than the AMCAS application, so don't worry about spending. Who's going to be abroad over the summer? Who's going to be abroad next year? Okay. I mean, you can always come up afterwards and talk to me about your individual situation if you haven't already, but obviously if you're in a place with decent internet or computer access, then we're going to be okay, and there shouldn't be any problem. But if you're going to a place where you don't have that, I mean, the thing I would tell you is kind of figure out the dates of, if it's the summer, just figure out the dates of when you're actually going to be gone and when you're going to be back. And if you get a secondary within a couple of weeks of your return date, just don't deal with it until you get back. Have a reliable person back here checking your mail, if you don't mind giving your parents your email address, login, or whatever you need, or set up a new email address, whatever you need to do, and do it when you get back. If it's going to be more than a couple of weeks, then you're going to somehow need to get computer access. And we do have some people going to internet cafes and that are 50 miles away from where they're living to fill out their secondary applications. So if you don't know that about where you're going to be right now, then make sure you do some work thinking about it and finding out. Okay? Do things, I mean, again, this is common sense, and maybe you guys do it already, but make sure you check your junk folders and things like that in your email. When med schools download applications, they often send out the invites to fill out a secondary in mass. So you're... whatever, Yahoo or Gmail or whatever, maybe thinking it's junk mail, and you may be getting an invitation to fill out a secondary that's just sitting there in your junk folder. So make sure you do things like that. Then you're going to wait for an interview. And it, like I said at the beginning, interviews can start anywhere from late August through next April. You know, really, a lot of medical schools just finished interviewing last week or the week before. So it'll really depend on the school, depend on your situation, what have you. Most interviews are not going to be in late August. Most interviews are going to be in October, November, February, March. Those are the peak months of interviewing, okay? And make sure you come to our office and check in with us, as most of you have been doing already. And if you're an alum, if you're graduating, you may not be aware of the fact that we have online drop-ins for alumni, so you can IM me or Ms. Deutsch at certain times during next year and just have fun asking us questions. Okay, let's talk about the essay, though, because that's the thing that, like, that's really the third part of the application that's going to take you a lot of time. You should have the handout already that I gave you, or that was at the back of the room. Oh, here it is. About the personal statement. And I'm not going to read this all to you, but I'm going to go over a couple of sections of it beyond what Mr. Shaw said here at the beginning about what we want you to be thinking of when you write this document, okay? What does the document say on the MCAS application? It used to be just a blank page. The last few years, they started saying something like, describe why you want a medical education, I think, or something like that. Explain why you want a medical education. So that sounds like you should start out with the first sentence being, I want a medical education because, and I think, as we may have said to you, if we commented on your autobiography at all when you were in our office, or maybe just in other ways you picked up, that's probably not the best way to go about writing your personal statement, okay? It's certainly going to sound like a lot of other personal statements, and it's a little too literal, okay? The fact that for generations they didn't have any prompt at all would indicate to me that most medical schools, at least historically, have wanted something that expresses how unique you are. And to be honest, I find when you guys come in our office and say why you want to be a doctor, you don't sound that unique, and that's fine. I mean, to be honest, if you all say the same thing, it means that those are probably pretty good reasons for wanting to be a doctor. But you don't necessarily want to line up, you know, reason A, reason B, and reason C, and leave that be your essay, because you do run the risk of sounding like everybody else. So let's talk a little bit about what you might do instead. I mean, they give you some ideas here on AMCAS. They say special hardships, challenges, obstacles. Commentary on significant fluctuations in your academic grade, maybe. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But, I mean, that may sound, the first point there may sound a lot like your college essay that you wrote. Oh, here it is. Use the space provided to explain why you want to go to medical school. Okay? As we said, I'm going to read a little bit of this to you, okay, this handout. The personal statement is your opportunity to personalize your medical school application. Your essay or personal comments should reveal something about yourself that is not discussed at length elsewhere on the application, and it should make admission deans want to meet you. They often use this part of your application to sort through their maybe piles and determine who to invite for an interview. Ultimately, the personal statement is one of the only parts of your process that you still have control over at the time you're actually applying. Your GPA, MCAT score, and experiences are largely behind you, but you can still improve your chances by writing well. Okay. And then I am going to go over some of these things to think about. Because if you, like I said, if you do just write about why I want to be a doctor or why I want to go to medical school, I don't think you're necessarily utilizing the space on your AMCAS application for the personal statement to the best of your ability. Okay. The worst personal statements that we tend to see from you guys when you turn in your AMCAS later, because you guys, as I think Keith said, you guys are all pretty good writers. The worst ones are the ones that are just dead weight on your application. They're just kind of basically neutral. It's very, very rare that we see a personal statement that harms someone's application. I mean, where you just are such a poor writer, or you say something so completely inappropriate that will do you in. So please just relax about that, okay? But do you really want a dead weight on your application? No. I mean, you want to use every space you're given to somehow, you know, incite someone to invite you to an interview, okay? So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to go from very good personal statement to excellent personal statement, okay? Make it personal. It's called a personal statement. It's called personal comments. Okay, your audience should get an idea of who you are and what you are like in person. Most of your autobiographies that we read, which I know is just kind of a starting document, weren't autobiographies. I'll be honest with you. They were resumes that you guys had taken and put in prose form. And I think Keith mentioned that at the beginning here. A lot of you take what you've done on a resume and line it up and say that's your essay. Autobiographies, where you're born, where you're from, who your family is, what your favorite color is, do you have a dog, do you have a cat, you know, are you a night person, are you a I mean, I don't want to need all that stuff. But you know, an autobiography is a little more personal than what a lot of you guys gave us, okay? So, and I don't think the personal comments thing, because it's called personal comments on the AMCAS application, is any less personal. So let's think about that. One thing you might want to think about is telling a story or an anecdote, not your life story, not, you know, literally from the day you were born. You're not going to be given that chance with 5,300 characters, which is really one single space page. But instead, focus on one or two experiences that you believe distinguish you. Meaningful events and people who have influenced you are also topics to consider. Think about what hasn't already been included elsewhere on your AMCAS. So when you're picking these three most significant experiences that you want, or they want to talk about in the work activities section, nine times out of ten, it might be a good idea to pick three different ones than what you talk about in your essay. That's probably maximizing the application and getting the most bang for your buck. Not necessarily, but generally speaking, you know, use the little fields for something and then use your AMCAS application for something else, or your personal statement for something else. And be positive. The personal statement is not the place to explain problems with your academic record or disciplinary action. I would disagree with what we just read the AMCAS people tell you, to some extent. Or disciplinary action taken against you, unless these issues are directly tied to a pivotal period in your life. Okay? If you learn important lessons from past mistakes, you may mention the transcript, but keep it the focus positive. AMCAS gives you another place to discuss disciplinary action. So for those of you that have a semester where everything tanked academically, which we've talked about before, or those of you that do have disciplinary action, if you got in trouble for drinking or doing something stupid, there are other, well, for the second thing, there's another place in your application where you're actually supposed to fess up on that. You've already fessed up to us. We've already talked about it in your interview. And there's a whole field where you get to describe it. So please don't spend time in your personal statement doing that again, okay? And for the first thing, which probably applies to more of you, where you had one semester where academically things just didn't go very well, or even one year where things didn't go as well as you wanted. Again, we may have already talked about this with you. If we haven't, then come see us and we can talk about it some more. It may be something that you feel really bitter about or upset about or whatever, but it may not be something you particularly want to share with medical schools. It may not even be that big of a deal, but your standards for yourself may be so high that you may think it's a big deal. We can kind of give you some perspective if you're one of those people. Or it may be something that you really, because there was a crisis that you were going through or health problem or something, you really do want to describe. That's okay as a topic for a personal statement. Again, as I said, if it's kind of linked to some larger, more positive developmental growth thing that you think you were going through. For instance, some of you that were, and I'm sure there are people here in this room right now that had some major health issue the last 3 or 4 years that is reflected on their transcript, but it is also directly tied to why they want to be a doctor. Okay? And that would be perfectly fine to talk about in the essay. But if it's a semester where you broke up with your boyfriend and you were really stressed out because of that, or it's a semester where you just took on too many classes, I'm not sure that's a very positive way to go about using this space on the personal comments. If it's something where you did break up with your girlfriend or your boyfriend, or something where you did take on too many classes, then you, again, you probably talked about it in your interview with us, and your committee letter will address it if it's something that we feel like is really context that med schools need to have. Okay? And again, you know, share that with us in the coming weeks if you haven't already. But remember that we're working here for you, so we can do some of that in our committee letter. You don't need to be sending the space on the personal statement to do that. Does that make sense? Okay. I'm going to skip over how you begin writing, because hopefully you guys by now have written a few things. If you're stuck, if you have writer's cramp and you can't get going, read through that. Under the remember section on the second page, if you skip down, what is it, maybe the fourth bullet, you probably heard, I know if you interviewed with me, you probably heard me say this, already about an effective interview or an effective personal statement or effective autobiography. I don't know if Ms. Deutsch harps on it quite as much as I do, but we both believe, I know, that a very good personal statement is going to be one that includes details, that gives specific examples that illustrate what you're trying to say about yourself. Details make your essay more personal and you more memorable. So for instance, you know, even if you don't hear us today and you do start that essay, then the very first sentence is, I want to go to medical school because. If you do that and then go into a specific illustration or a story or an example of when you realize this about yourself, or an experience you had that really indicated to you how you might be suited to be a doctor, then it is going to be more personal. And even though that first sentence may not shine, hopefully the rest of the essay will, because it is something that's very unique to you. If you say that in the first couple sentences and then go on to the really line up your resume items and go on to the next experience and the next experience and the next experience, and in one single space page you manage to talk about 8 experiences, you've skimmed the surface, you've given them a prose version of your resume, and you certainly haven't given them many details. So you're going to have to be ruthless about what you leave out of the personal comments. And that's tough sometimes for those of you that have a lot of things you want to share. Okay. Common mistakes. I may have gotten ahead of myself here. I may say this. But a couple things I wanted to emphasize. The first thing, obviously, be grammatical and proofread. But use your own voice. A professional but conversational tone will work best. Avoid quotations by famous people if you can help it. Quoting Maya Angelou or Henry David Thoreau doesn't make it about you. A lot of you maybe wrote your college essays this way and they were successful, and that's nice. But you have such a limited space that if you're spending a lot of time with your favorite quote, you're taking the essay away from you, okay? And it needs to be about you. Don't pretend that you know what it's like to be a doctor. And we read a good number of autobiographies that did this. I mean, we do every year, where you spend a full paragraph telling me what a doctor does. The people reading these things at med schools know more about being a doctor than you do. So I wouldn't spend a lot of time describing the profession. You might spend a lot of time describing why you want to enter the profession, but it's very easy to slip into what a doctor does. And sometimes there's a lot of wasted space there about what a doctor does. And just be a little bit careful about that. Keep your self-promotion in check. And here we are talking about, you know, advertising yourself in this, you know, application that takes a month, and then I say something like, keep your self-promotion in check. I mean, this whole exercise is self-promotion, so it's a little bit of a, I realize it's a little bit of a contradiction to say keep it in check, but be proud of your accomplishments, but be very careful not to sound arrogant, okay? Do not start all your sentences with I, if you can help it. Skip down a little bit. Keep your focus on one or two topics. That's kind of what I've already said about being detailed. And use the writing center, okay? There's some things I want to add, though, here. About the personal statement. Don't choose a topic for your personal statement, if you can help it, that you're not emotionally in control of. And so when you start thinking about things you might want to write about, and you think about the things that make me different, the things that are significant to me, the things that are tied to why I want to enter the profession, you may come up with something that is a really emotionally charged thing. It's all fair game in an interview. So anything you're putting down there is certainly fair game. And we're telling you to be personal. I mean, we're telling you all these things. So I can picture you guys sometimes coming up with something that might be a death of someone you cared about. Or it might be certainly a serious illness of someone that you cared about. Or it might be something like that. That is perfectly fine to talk about as long as you're in emotionally control of the situation. And if you're not, then talk about it with somebody and figure out whether you're in emotional control of it. Because when you're in an interview, you know, it's not, crying is not wrong. I mean, it's perfectly fine. But I think it would upset you, and you probably leave an interview feeling like you didn't do a very good job if you didn't have emotional control over whatever you're talking about. And someone may be moved by what you wrote. And in an interview, they may want to talk to you about it. So just think about that. Any MD PhDs? I know there's a few of you this year. You've got 2 additional essays, right? Lucky you. Why do you want an MD PhD and tell us about your research? So obviously the personal comments really isn't going to be about your research. And don't feel like to be really research serious, you have to make everything about your research. I mean, the personal comments should be something else about you other than your research, because you're given these other places to talk about that. Okay. The TIMDAS application, for those of you that are Texans, you know, limits you to 62 lines. And it asks you literally, what are your reasons for pursuing medicine with relevant experience? Okay. VIMCAS, ADSAS, okay. What are, after you've done all this, and we'll get to your questions here in a second, but after you've done all this and you submit your AMCAS, you get these secondary applications, there are more essays to come. They're shorter. They're not, and I know one single space page doesn't sound like very long to you, but they're more one paragraph kind of essays. I don't know if you call that an essay or not, kind of a long answer question kind of thing. What are typical questions that a lot of med schools ask you on their secondaries? Why do you want to come to our school is probably the first one, right? That they don't really ask that on the generic application. They can't, but they certainly do on their secondary applications. How does their curriculum suit you? How do you feel like you are a good fit with either their school or their curriculum? And we probably told you guys, I hope we did back in November, to not worry too much about, I'm not talking about the specialties that a certain medical school is strong in, because you're not expected at the applicant stage of things to know what you want to specialize in. And if anyone's asking you that question, they're just trying to make conversation with you. They're not really holding you to anything. It doesn't help to say, I want to be a pediatric cardiologist. That doesn't mean anything to most people, because they know that you're going to change your mind. But what they're asking is, have you even gone online and looked to see what might be unique about their curriculum at that school? And have you thought about how you learn best? In what situations at Princeton did you thrive academically? And how does that match up maybe with the way they teach the basic preclinical sciences? Because all medical schools in this country teach, on some level, the same thing, right? But they teach it in very different ways. Well, somewhat different ways. So there used to be a curriculum directory on that AAMC website that was a really nifty thing, and you could go through and compare all the schools. That no longer exists, but what they've done, and I think we put that in that first email that we sent to you, advice to applicants, part one. You're going to get about 10 of them before this year's over. So, but part one, I think we mentioned in there that the new MSAR that just came out in April, when you purchase it, you're purchasing the hard copy and also online access. And when you go online and look at the different medical schools, the way the AAMC presents them, there are ways to learn about the curriculum at those schools. It's not quite as extensive as the curriculum directory used to be, but and if nothing else, you can just go to the individual websites for the individual schools, okay? But think about that. Problem-based learning is big, so if you've been if you're a Woody Woo student and you've spent a lot of time in a task force solving problems, then that's great. You've got that question answered. But not all do, and some medical schools are still very much lecture-based in the preclinical sciences, and you may be very comfortable in a larger lecture. I mean, think about that. Think about how you learn best. What makes you special? You know, after you just wrote this frickin' personal statement that went on and on about how special you are, some secondaries turn around and say, what really makes you special? That's a hard question when you poured your heart and soul out on the application before, but they are expecting you to say something new. You can't just take what you've already told them and cough it back up again. So think about that. Another very common one is describe your life 10 years from now. Not very common, but it's fairly common. Describe what you think your life would be like. I guess that would be in residency and beyond residency. And again, they're not necessarily saying that they want you to pick a specialty and say exactly what you're going to be specializing in. But have you thought about balancing your personal and professional life as a physician? Have you thought about the challenges of that? And have you thought about at least maybe, do you want to be at the bedside a lot, or do you want to be in a lab? Or are you more primary care oriented or more specialty oriented? At least be thinking about that. That's about as far as you need to go with that. All right, I'm going to stop there and answer your questions, because I bet a few of them have come up. And then I do have a few parting words of advice, but we're only at 5:20, so I want to try to end at 5:30 or so. So what, after all that, what have I not touched on? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. What do we mean by professional but conversational tone? Basically, the way you conducted yourself in your PAI with us, I would assume. I mean, I don't know that, but if you didn't, you were told. And there were a few people. No, every year, there are a few of you that come in and are a little too casual. And there are a few of you that come in and are a little too formal. And I think those are people that are at the end of the spectrum, and you would know that about yourself by now. So basically the way you probably talk to professors, I hope. I mean, you may be really tight with some professors and may, be a little bit more casual with some. But a professor that you don't know very well, that you're talking to about something that you've learned in class or whatever, I mean, that would be the tone I would probably adopt. Does that answer your question? I mean, I think I mentioned humor in here in the writing. In terms of writing your personal statement and using humor, that that's a great way to kind of be conversational. If you're witty or if you are self-deprecating in your humor, but be careful about obviously saying something that's at the expense of other people. I mean, humor often is at the expense of other people, and that's not going to go over very well in an interview. So that would not be professional. It might be very conversational, but it wouldn't be professional. It's probably not the way you talk to your friends. It's probably slightly different than the way you talk to your friends. A lot of you use some pretty generationally vast colloquial language when you talk to your friends, and you're probably going to want to listen to yourself a little bit and weed some of the likes and the whatever out of your life. My 4-year-old says awesome now, and it drives me absolutely nuts. He's 4 years old, and he says awesome all the time. I think you guys outgrew a lot of those things, but listen to yourself and practice with some friends if you feel like that may be a problem. I noticed it in some of you when you came in my office, I know, and maybe you mentioned it to you, so someone else may have already told you this. What else? Yeah. Well, I mentioned, it's a little odd, but I did mention that a minute ago. Like, if you're going off to do something next year and you know it's going to be, I mean, just time has shown that other people who've done this, it's been a big life-changing thing, or you're just really, really excited about it. I think that could be one of your significant experiences, especially if it's tied into what you've done already. Like, if you're a global health certificate person and you're going off to do something in global health, then I think you could list that as one of your significant. It's a little strange because it hasn't happened yet, but... I think it could be talked about, especially if you know the details of what the experience is and can really show that you know what you're getting into. And I don't know which your situation is, but I know a lot of the Princeton-based things that you might be doing next year, you have resources to figure out pretty much what you're going to be doing day to day, and you know a lot about it. If it's a job, maybe not. But does that help?
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't. Yeah, I think that's fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, your 4 to 6 letters that you've given us, hopefully by now, or you will be finishing up giving to us very soon. When your committee letter is done, we'll get uploaded to AMCAS and be gone. If you have any other letter that you get kind of naturally, I mean, please don't go unnaturally about getting an additional letter. There's nothing, just because she asked that question doesn't mean that you have to go do it, okay? I mean, I don't mean to pick on people, but like sometimes if the woman sitting next to me does it, then I feel like I have to do it too. That is a pretty common pre-med phenomenon. And please don't feel like, I mean, we've given you 4 to 6 letters. We've given you plenty of space to have people voice how much they love you and send that off to medical schools. So there's no need to get more. But if in some situations there is someone else, like those of you that do have, if you're graduating and you have something coming up where you really get to know someone quite in depth in the coming year, or maybe over the summer. You're only a junior, right?
Yeah.
So maybe something over the summer. You can have that letter sent to Jen, and Jen will forward it as an addendum to AMCAS. And AMCAS allows you to do that, okay? But once the letters are uploaded to AMCAS that we do over the summer, med schools are going to get them and download them. And there is a phenomenon sometimes of med schools just not knowing there's anything in this new. They think your file is complete. So they don't necessarily go back and download. So we tell people in that situation to email your schools and say, look, there was one additional letter that I got. Would you please go to AMCAS and get it? Okay. If it's much later in the year, which would only be for if maybe this time next year you're sitting on a wait list or something like that, and there's someone else that you want to get a letter from, again, because it happened naturally and it was just kind of an organic thing, then Jen usually sends it directly to the schools because AMCAS by that point is checked out of the process. So, good question. What else? Yeah. Yeah. What's the contact info for? Yeah. What's your example of that? That's new and that's kind of a pain.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. Like, volunteers.
Right.
But are they contacting?
No, they're not. But it is going to require you to be a little bit of a sleuth and find out the name of some people that you may not have seen for 2 years or 3 years. So, and that's a pain. You know, they always ask for a contact name, but this is the first year they've asked for a phone number or email address. And it can be a fellow student. If it's a club or organization on campus that you're involved in, then I would put the president or whoever is leading that club's name down and their name and email address. But you don't need to go find them on campus and tell them they might get contacted. They're not going to get contacted, okay? If it's a job supervisor, then that's pretty obvious. If it's a research experience, it would be the PI or someone who oversaw the research. I mean, you know, use your common sense. But you are, in terms of getting a phone number or an email address, it may take a little bit of time on Google or something to find these people, okay? Yeah. Aren't taking your MCAT?
No, like, won't be taking it until July.
Yeah. You do have to take the MCAT. Yeah. Good question. I know what your question is. Go ahead and finish, but I'm glad you brought that up.
Will we still be able to submit it in our application? Like, how do we add the scores?
Yeah, did you guys hear that question? And I think, I know I preached this to you last fall, but let me say this again because I'm really glad you asked that. This early June Submit Your AMCAS applies to everybody in this room, okay? Now, those of you that are not taking the MCAT until, what is it, June 16th, I think is one of the dates, or any of those dates in July, maybe it's not quite as urgent that you submit your AMCAS in early June, but I would get it in sometime in June, okay? Because the process of verifying your AMCAS and the process of them sending secondaries automatically and you giving them another application fee and writing these short essays, all that stuff takes weeks, okay? And you really want to get that ball rolling, even if you haven't taken the MCAT yet or the MCAT score has not been, you don't know your score yet, okay? So it is a little tricky in this month of May or early June when you're filling out your MCAS to pick your schools when you don't know an MCAT score. But as I think I told you guys, that when you do get that MCAT score, if it's much better or much worse than you expected it to be, you can go back into AMCAS and add schools. Either, you know, schools you perceive as easier or schools you perceive as harder or whatever it is. You can tweak your list of schools. But it's much better to get the process going than to wait until you've taken your MCAT, wait until you've gotten an MCAT score, which is 30 days later, to even start this process. Okay? On the AMCAS, and I didn't show that slide, but on the AMCAS, there's a place that asks you about the date you've either taken or intend to take the MCAT. Okay? And so if the date, and if you're retaking the MCAT, this would apply to you too. If any of you took the MCAT already but are retaking it, make sure that that date's on there. And by now, you should know when you're taking it, guys. Okay, if you're applying for 2012, you should have at least picked a date in July or picked a date in June and be thinking about which date you're targeting. And the time's now. Okay, so, and put that on your AMCAS application. And then no med school is going to evaluate you. Even if you're retaking the MCAT and you have this miserable score from the first time, they're not going to evaluate you until they get the new score. So don't worry about getting rejected because you're missing an MCAT score or the old score is really bad. But make sure you get the ball rolling. Every year some people don't get this message, and you guys, you know, again, if everything is hinging on whether or not you apply this year based on an MCAT score, then this is probably not the best year to be applying to medical school, and we need to talk about that because it's not going to be all about your MCAT score, guys. I mean, they really do try to look at you holistically. So if you're hanging everything on your MCAT score and waiting to even fill out the application until you get the score, then you're probably someone who should be applying next year. But we can talk about that one-on-one. So, yeah?
If you are doing that and applying before you actually have a score, will you get secondaries before they get your score?
From a lot of schools, you will.
Okay.
Yep.
And you should still send them back?
Yep. Yep. And then everything will stop until they get an MCAT score. But by the time that date comes, it's probably going to be early August before you get to that point, and that's probably when they're going to start getting your MCAT score. I mean, I don't know when you take your MCAT, but whenever you're taking your MCAT, that's probably about the time they're going to get your MCAT score, and then they can invite you for an interview, just like everybody else. Okay? This is kind of why we told you guys that July was still an okay month to take your MCAT. I mean, it was on the assumption that you were going to still be doing all this other legwork leading up to it. Okay? Because you really can be in the boat with everybody else as long as you're getting your application filled out along the way. Okay, but once you move the MCAT into August or even early September, then you really are a later pool of applicants, and it does put you at a disadvantage. So let's do two more questions. Yeah.
If we submit our application before our spring break get in, do we send them?
Because we're late and our spring semester is not over in time. Your transcript request form, when you get to that was one of the nine categories. I don't know if you saw that, but it was one of the nine categories on here of the MCAS application. When you get to that stage of the application, you're going to print that transcript request form out. You're going to take it to the registrar and tell them explicitly to not send it until spring grades are in. Okay, and you might even just wait until close to the end of spring. I mean, don't do it tomorrow. You might just wait a little bit. Because there have been times, even though people have said that very explicitly, the registrar sends it anyway. They're pretty good about it. I mean, they have 100 and some of you applying every year to medical school. So but if you get someone in the registrar's office who doesn't know what they're doing or something, then you're going to just have to redo the transcript request form later. So you might wait just a little bit, but tell them that. And then the transcript request form will go in when your spring grades are done. Okay? That's on the checklist. Again, this is another one of those details you really don't need to keep in your head right now, but it's on that yellow checklist. Let's do one more question. Yeah. Yes, you're going to list it as a course. Yep. Senior thesis goes in as a course with credit. Senior thesis defense, if you did a defense in your department and got a grade for it, I think at least on most of your transcripts, you'd get zero credit for that. You just get the grade. So it won't actually affect your GPA, but you need to list it. Okay. The other question that's very common, too, is those of you who have certificates, there's no, when you fill out your MCAS application, there's no choice of certificate. It's a minor. Just consider it a minor. I think Shirley Tillman might roll over if she heard me say this, because I don't know that the philosophy here at Princeton is that they're really minors, but AMCAS thinks they are. So just fill it out as a minor. It's certainly the language that the rest of the world will understand. I want to give you some parting advice, and then those of you that have questions, just come up and ask me afterwards, okay? I think I made it pretty clear that you need to allow enough time for this thing. That's why we're having this meeting today. Please spend the month of May working on this. It'll make it a much more pleasant thing than leaving this. This is not an application you can do the night before June, you know, in early June sometime in one night. Please talk to AMCAS as much as possible when you have these very application-specific questions, because they really are the best resource for that. Use the Writing Center, as Keith said. There are times that are going to be set up starting next week where you can get your personal statement looked at. And in addition to a Writing Center fellow, I would strongly encourage you to have other people read it as well, your friends, your parents, whatever. Take their advice with a grain of salt. Please don't change it every time someone tells you something. Use your own powers of judgment on this, but at least have someone else check, especially for tone. Tone is probably the biggest one. If you're sounding really arrogant and really full of yourself with the mission of promoting yourself, and you just went overboard and you went over the top a little bit, then someone else will pick up on that very, very quickly. Okay, so please make sure someone else reads that. Remember, you're not in this process by yourself. I think we've made that clear. I'm certainly here. Ms. Deutsch is here. Read these emails that come to you. Like I said, advice number one, there are going to be at least 9 more of them over the course of the year. I can kind of predict what stage most of you are at in the application process and hopefully head you off at the pass with some of your questions. So make sure you read those carefully, okay? And we'll see you, hopefully, at least some of you next week for this in the same room, same time, to talk about interviewing. But good luck, you guys, all right? So I know there are some questions. Yeah.
So credit hours, is that just like 3 in class?
Four. Hold on just a second. I forgot to turn this off.